Anne Lamott puts it starkly in today's reading, stay where it's comfortable and you will die. And I don't think she's just talking about where the comfort is bad, but actually also where it's good. Even where the comfort is good, you will die if you stay there. I think she's right. And what I know is that being able to come out of that good, comfortable status quo takes risk. And this is why I'm delighted that our theme for September is, what does it mean to be a people of risk? It is a timely theme for me personally, and I think for our fellowship community. One thing to lift up out of the gate is that there are no guarantees that the risks we take will actually be successful. One definition of risk in my dictionary is to expose oneself to the chance of injury or loss. Yeah, it should be obvious, but we need to be fully aware that risk is, well, risky. It doesn't always work. It can result in injury or loss, sometimes catastrophically. Also, it's important out of the gate to say that not all risks are smart risks. I lifted up in the newsletter article that I wrote with Leah that trying to walk from the south rim to the north rim of the Grand Canyon in one day in June at the age of 50 was a dumb risk. I'll never know how close the heat exhaustion I experienced came to the potentially life-ending heat stroke. As I said maybe 1,000 times to my hiking partner that day, this was the dumbest thing ever. So please do not leave the fellowship today, go home, quit your job, sell everything, dump your spouse, or get engaged to someone you just met yesterday and say, my minister told me to do this. No, I did not. Some risks are dumb. The risk you're about to take might be dumb. Think about it. So I think of some of the key moments in my own life where I took a risk, a smart risk, and the difference it's made. One was I decided to study abroad in Sri Lanka, a country very different from where I lived my whole life. And oh yeah, there was a war going on there too. And in my journey, that was really the most significant launching point for my passionate focus on diversity and inclusion. Another smart risk was taking a time out of intimate relationships after a long string of bad relationships, one after another, and taking the time out to reflect, to not be involved in a relationship, to face some painful truths, to grow. That was a hard time, but it paved the way for a much healthier relationship, which just last week marked its 26th year of commitment. Another smart risk for me was coming to a small, not necessarily financially viable congregation with big dreams. Right out of divinity school. Yep, this place. I don't know about all of you, but from my perspective, that risk has worked out pretty well. It's pushed me to be a better person, a better minister. And I could have played it safe. I could have picked a more solid, established congregation to bet my future career on. And I'm glad I didn't. And I'm now entering into a new season of risk in my life when I leave here next summer. I'm taking the risk of walking the talk of equal mutual marriage, and I'm leaving a wonderful job to step into an unknown future in terms of my career. However this turns out, I'm confident that this is a smart risk because it's causing me to live up to my belief not only in mutual marriage, but that the marriage must be at the center of one's life. This month, I invite you to give some thought to the risks you've taken, big and small, which have made your life what it is today. As we think about risk, I think it works in communities of people in the same way that it works in individual lives. So as I think about this fellowship, I can see the numerous times where this congregation took a risk to change the status quo, the comfortable status quo. This quality is one of the things that makes this congregation extraordinary. I mean, the status quo here has often been not only comfortable, but actually pretty darn good. And yet, The congregations had the spiritual maturity to risk that for something even better. It's an amazing quality. Here are a few of the risks the fellowship has taken over the years. First of all, the 9 people that decided to found a liberal religious congregation in Joe McCarthy's Fox Valley, 1955. Moving from the comfortable, much lower stakes of renting space for Sunday mornings to buying what seemed like the enormous Moose Lodge in 1981. Voting in the late 1980s to embrace growth in numbers, even though people liked the intimacy of the fellowship that was 100 members at the time. Calling for their first settled minister, this 27-year-old rookie right out of seminary with a tenuous understanding of Unitarian Universalism. Risking the comfortable status quo of a heteronormative congregation to welcome intentionally lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer folks. Leaving the quirky but comfortable, if you could get up the front steps, Moose Lodge, and digging deep in the pockets to build a new accessible building, and now in the past year to add on to that building. Well, at this point, before proceeding with the sermon, I want to say 2 really important things about risk. First, we need to talk about the role of privilege in being able to take risks. I'm aware of the enormous privilege I've had in my life that enabled me to take those risks I shared about and so many others. If I'm born in a different country or a different class or with a different skin color, I do not necessarily have the options to take the risks I did. I'm able, for example, to take this next risk in my life because my wife has a good job and will be making enough money for me not to make much money maybe for a year or two. To cite an extreme example, if I'm a 20-year-old and I find myself on a cattle car headed to Auschwitz, I have a whole constrained set of choices than this kid who got on a plane to go to Sri Lanka for 4 months to study. Privilege. I had the privilege to do that. I know not everybody does. The second thing to say about risk is that it is good to think of risk not only in terms of those big things like quitting a job or something like that, but the small risks as well. And that's why I chose the reading today, which we heard a couple years ago. It's such a great reading. She talks about, Anne Lamott talks about risk in this grand way. And then she brings it down to the simple decision to leave the 7-Eleven and cross the street to get blackberries instead of wolfing down a chocolate bar. Now, in the scheme of life, that is not a huge risk, right? But for her, it was an important risk at that moment of her life. She left her comfortable status quo, which was self-medicating through chocolate, and she tried something different. So as you think about how you might risk the comfortable status quo to grow, don't just think about those big things, but think about the little risks you might be able to take today and tomorrow. They could really make a huge difference. So what are some ways that we can cultivate the ability to take smart risks as individuals and as a community? The first and most important for me is really engaging with the Buddha's idea of impermanence. I deeply believe with the Buddha that everything is impermanent. Me, you, this fellowship. When things are rotten in my life, that rotten status quo of my life I know is impermanent, and that's why suicide is not a good option. And heck, let's add to the impermanence category the sun, the earth, maybe even the universe. They're not going to be here forever. This gives me the perspective I need, because the truth is, even if I really, really like the status quo, it is not going to stick around. It's going to change, even if I cling to it. Change is inevitable. This puts risking the status quo in perspective. It's going to change anyway, so maybe why not take a smart risk? The second way I try to cultivate my ability to take risk is to have a very sort of general sense of faith. I have a basic faith that I will have the internal and the external resources to make the best of whatever unfolds in my life. This is not a Pollyannish faith that everything's going to turn out swell. But it says when trouble comes, I have the ability that at least I will have the opportunity to do the best I can do. I like that I'm hearing the same thing from the fellowship as people contemplate the uncertainty of a ministerial transition. And that faith that, you know what, we're going to do the best we can, and it's going to be a new, interesting chapter, that's going to serve the fellowship well. And finally, I cultivate the ability to take risks by understanding that this is about small as well as large risks, like eating the blackberries in the reading. And I think this is especially true in situations of oppression, where we have less privileges and less ability to take big, grandiose risks. Think about Viktor Frankl. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, in which he writes about his experiences in Auschwitz, he says that even there, he found the capacity to make some choices, to take some risks. Like what he thought about in his mind. He writes about one time he's walking along, forced to walk along with other people all night. It's cold, it's icy, they don't have adequate clothing. Guns are pointed at them, and they know the guards are all too willing to use the guns. And so he brings to mind his wife. Real or not, he writes, her look was then more luminous than the sun, which was beginning to rise. And not only did that luminous image of his wife keep him stumbling along that night, he realized for the first time the true meaning of life, that human salvation comes in and through love. Embracing the idea of love at Auschwitz, wow, that's a leap of faith. And though that leap of faith seemed ridiculous and didn't change the status quo one iota of his imprisonment or the fact his life could be snuffed out at any moment, that changed the status quo of his mind and his spirit. And that meant everything. So friends, what parts of your lives feel stale right now? What parts feel like you're under a mushroom, living in the dark, poop up to your chins? And what large or especially small risks could you take to step outside that stale comfort zone? If your marriage feels stale, maybe you and your life companion could sign up for the fellowship's heart-to-heart retreat. Yes, there's still room. And take the risk of sharing deeply with one another. Or you could set aside an evening a week or month or 20 minutes a week after your kids go to sleep for date night or date 20 minutes. If your spirit is sapped by a grudge, maybe you could consider forgiving that person. On the flip side, if your spirit is being dragged down by regrets, maybe you could take the risk of making amends to someone you hurt. If your spirituality feels stale, maybe you could take the risk of doing a spiritual practice for 10 minutes a day. If you're troubled by what happened in Ferguson, maybe you could take the risk of exploring how racism and privilege or lack of privilege work in your own life. And I want to talk about Ferguson for a moment. I'm somewhat amazed that Leah and I wrote a piece about Ferguson in the Fellowship's e-newsletter and heard absolutely nothing in return. Writing those couple paragraphs was actually one of the most difficult things we've worked on collaboratively. And then there was no comment whatsoever, which in this fellowship is actually kind of rare. So I'm wondering if there was a little bit of denial going on. You know, not our problem. That's Ferguson, not the Fox Valley. Or maybe that it just feels so complex and possibly even hopeless that we just as soon not think about it. Or maybe for some of us, unexamined white privilege was at work. Actually, for me, all those things I just said were going on in my own mind. And then this was exacerbated for me by spending a week in St. Louis helping my wife Amy get settled there. People there are not ignoring Ferguson. It comes up in conversation all the time, at least it did for me when I talked to other white people. The main thing we heard over and over again is you better be careful where you choose to live. The clear, though unspecified, typically implication was, don't live in Ferguson. Don't live in East St. Louis. Don't live anywhere that's predominantly populated by people of color. That's the thinking that caused the tragedy in Ferguson to happen in the first place. With few exceptions, it feels to me like St. Louis is now even more deeply entrenched in segregation, in racism, in hatred of the other. So what do I do when I move there? Do I get out of my comfortable car of white privilege and actually enter into that daunting work? Do I go along with the comfortable status quo, comfortable for whites, that is, and live a life of segregation? Where do Amy and I choose to live? Who do we choose to hang out with? Do we play it safe? Do we take some risks? And how about you? What are you going to do? At a recent social justice meeting here, someone shared the thought that injustice is not coming soon to a town near you. It's already in your town, and that's true. It's in Oshkosh. It's in Appleton. It's around us. So what are we going to do? What are you and I going to do about Ferguson here? I'll close today with one final thought and excerpts from a poem. The thought is that the other thing that helps people take risks is a willingness to live on the edge. The poem is called "The Edge is Where I Want to Be." It's by Lisa Martinovic, and honestly, it's a little bit edgy. It has some words that I never use in the pulpit, nor actually much in my own personal life. Here it is. So you just want to take the edge off. One beer, one joint, one teeny-weeny Prozac. Get rid of the edge? And what's life without an edge? That's right, it's dull. The edge is the cliff you've dangled from in 100 nightmares. You never know what's over the edge, and there's only one way to find out. Brothers and sisters, where are we? Who are we if we take the edge off? Lose the edge, and all you've got is middle. Middle-aged, middle-class, middle-of-the-road, middle-management. You're dribbling along in the uncooked vanilla pudding of life, all fat, no lean, hard edge to drive you. Sharpen your skills, your wit, your senses. The edge holds the answer to your questions, the question to your answers. It's the trailhead of the road not taken. The edge is everywhere you've never dared to be. Baby, if you're not on the edge, you're sleepwalking through, been there, done that. You're stuck watching reruns of somebody else's life in the great mushy middle where all the droning, moaning masses live and eat and act and dress and think alike and see the same movies so they can have the same conversations and then dream the same dreams if they dream at all. On the edge, you don't know what anybody is going to do or say or think. The edge is not available on your cell phone, iPod, satellite dish, or anywhere else in the Googleable universe. The edge does not Twitter. It thunders. And there are no disguises here on the edge. Everyone is naked, all bets are off, and the game's not rigged. The air is clear and brisk, your heart's pounding, you're shaking, you're lightheaded and queasy, you're scared because everything is initiation on that sharp, unforgiving edge. Damn right, it's uncomfortable. The edges change, it's what you don't see coming. So get out of your comfort zone and deal with it. But if you're tired and weary and battered, if you can't take one more asshole riding herd on your wild and precious life, if you're mad or sad or bored enough to wake up and do something, if you're ready to feel the pain of the great gaping wound your life has become, then goddammit, friends, quit your job. Quit smoking. Quit whining. Leave that jerk. Write that poem. Go dancing, get sober, take a road trip, a dare, a spin, a lover, a chance, honey. Break down and cry if that's what it takes. Then pick your ass up and for all your worth, run, don't walk to the edge.